Hey everyone, I'm Jordan from New St. Andrews College. I'd like to invite you to join us for one of our upcoming prospective student weekends. We have one on March 2nd and 3rd, and another from April 13th to 16th. To learn more and to register your visit, check us out online at nsa.edu. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
All right, so we're continuing our series of episodes discussing what I call the worldview wheel. And of course, the worldview wheel is the grace of God. Christ is the axle. The lordship of Christ over all things, surrounding all things, would be the rim of the wheel. And then I'm considering individually the separate spokes of the wheel. So there are four spokes of the wheel, constituent parts of the worldview. And we've considered catechesis, or the doctrinal answers to the basic questions, which is what most people think of when they think of worldview. When you say, what is your worldview, you're saying, what does your brain think? What is your idea about this? Are you a creationist, or are you an evolutionist? How would you answer the question of origins? Are you a theist, or are you an atheist? How would you answer the question about the existence of a divine being? So that's what most people think of as worldview, but that's actually just one spoke of the worldview. That's an important part of a worldview, but it's not the whole thing. So we're considering in turn each of the spokes of our worldview wheel, and we've seen how all four spokes work together, how they all need one another, and we've considered the spoke of revealed and objective propositional truth. Jesus is Lord. He died on the cross. He rose again from the dead. God created the world. Those are statements of propositional truth. So we come now to the second spoke of the wheel, which is lifestyle, or the way we actually live, right? The way we actually live. In James, the Epistle of James, chapter 1, verse 22 through 25, it says this, But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word, and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself, and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty, and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed. So James is very clear here, perhaps a little more clear than we would like sometimes. He says that we are to do the word and not just hear it. So if someone hears the word and he nods his head, that would be propositional assent, and that would qualify you for the first spoke, catechesis. But James says those who hear without obedience, these people are self-deceived. So what's the point of the deception? What do these people think is true that's actually not true? They have come to believe that hearing truth is tantamount to living the truth. In other words, if you put up with a preacher who tells you all the time to love your wife and to respect your husband, the mere fact that this is taught without apology at the church you decided to go to, then this must mean that you're doing it. Right? If I put up with sermons on it, if I'm willing to have that truth declared, then that must mean I'm obeying. But this is self-deception, James says. He then gives us an illustration. Such a person looks in the mirror, sees the spinach in his teeth, and immediately thinks, whoa, better do something about that. But what he does about it is step away from the mirror, which has started to reveal certain unpleasant truths about him. The mirror obviously has a critical spirit. But the man who stands in front of the mirror of Scripture, which is the perfect law of liberty, has a certain constancy about him. As James would put it, he continueth therein. It's not just an occasional glance at the mirror, but he's looking at himself continually. He's holding up the word against his life on a regular basis, a continual basis. He is not a forgetful hearer. But James is no works monger, even though this man is a doer of the work. he does the work. He doesn't sell the work. He's not relying on the work instead of Christ, but the work of Christ in him is doing a work. Note especially that this man is blessed in his deed. That's what James says. He's blessed in his deed. Raw doing by itself is just as fruitless as raw believing. The blessing of God's grace is absolutely necessary. So, in talking about catechesis, in talking about what we think, we looked at Romans, where the Apostle Paul tells us to believe in our hearts and to confess with our mouths. The propositional content of our faith matters. And here we consider James teaching us how true faith results in action. These two emphases are not inconsistent with each other at all. To continue with the metaphor, if there's a break between the axle and the propositional spoke, there will also necessarily be a break between the axle and the lifestyle spoke. So we are not just what we think. We are what we do. And what we do is an outworking of what we actually think. So one of the characteristic features of our ministry is that we've sought for many years to have practical teaching from the Word of God on many practical aspects of our lives before God. We've diligently sought to establish the assumption that doctrine in the airy heavens is worthless. Doctrine by itself in the airy heavens is worthless, and that the precious doctrines of our holy religion were given to us in order that they might be lived. And that's why I seek to preach on things like child rearing, or on marriage, or on vocational pursuits, or on finances, and so forth. This is not instead of expository preaching through books of the Bible, because I've preached through Deuteronomy, and preached through Ephesians, and preached through Romans, and preached through Hebrews, and so on. So it's not instead of exposition, but it's an important complement to it. We believe that there is a distinctively Christian approach to marriage, distinctively Christian approach to education of children, to the management of household finances, to the work ethic that we're to exhibit when we get up in the morning, and so on. Pushing it further, we believe that there's a distinctively Christian take or approach to auto mechanics and dentistry. We do not believe that we have this approach well in hand, or that there are no disagreements possible between Christians on such subjects, but that's what we're pursuing. And we don't want to come up with silly examples. Like, it's not as though we believe that a Christian carpenter and a non-Christian carpenter would pound the nail in differently. You know, like he pounds the pointy end first and we pound the dull end first. That's not the kind of thing we're talking about. But they're really, I'm fond of saying that theology comes at your fingertips. And whatever it is that's coming at your fingertips, in your actual lifestyle, in how you shop, in how you do your business, in how you drive to work, in how you mow the lawn, all these lifestyle issues are worldview issues. So, in the in this, it's there's an important part of this has to do with the adverbs. It's not just what we're doing, but it's how we're doing it. That is joyfully in the fruit of the Spirit. So we want to take this as an obvious place to emphasize something that needs to be evident with not just this spoke and the spoke of the lifestyle, but all of them. As we make what we would call lifestyle choices, that we want to be sure that the standard is not to suit yourself or to indulge your own opinions. The manner of choosing must be love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Galatians 5:22 and 23. These traits are not to be operative merely in the fellowship time after church. They're not, love, joy, peace are not limited to the coffee and donuts time. They are to be the governing attitude when two moms are talking about education options, one's going to a Christian school, the other's homeschooling, let's say, or when a Kirker family approaches someone else in the church to conduct business with them. when they're sorting out the difficulties because somebody did a slipshod job. Or conversely, if the customers took advantage of their brother. When you're talking about alternatives in medical treatments, when you're urging your friend to buy a Ford instead of the Chevy or vice versa. So we ought not to just say, okay, I believe that on Sunday, and I believe that love, joy, peace, et cetera, is important when I'm talking about theological subjects. No, it's important when you're correcting your children. It's important when you're teaching the third grade classroom. It's important when you are negotiating with someone on the purchase price of a car. Okay, so what gets in the way? What gets in the way of all this? Of course, the Sunday school answer is that sin gets in the way, but this is too general. What kind of sin? In every area of our lives, whether it is our deeply held beliefs or our symbolic or liturgical desires or the story we tell or the way we choose to live our lives, the sin that intrudes like nothing else would be the sins of pride and envy. We are imitative creatures. That's how we have a shared lifestyle at all, right? And that's how God made us. And we are competitive and envious creatures because of Adam's fall. So we're imitative creatures because of how God made us, and we take that imitative drive and we twist it into pride and envy because of sin. Put this together and you can have a real mess. Imitation brings us close together, and envy brings us together in conflict. Because we're Christians, we have long since learned to say, well, it's not that I wanted that job, it's the principle of the thing. You did too want the job, and you wanted it because he wanted it. So, without the cross of Christ being proclaimed regularly and with power, lifestyle claims in the name of the Lordship of Jesus Christ would be the most dangerous thing in the world. Without the Spirit of God present turn into legalisms, you know, for 2 cents. This is why it's so necessary to remain robustly evangelical, where you're preaching the cross and the resurrection of Jesus, and you're preaching the absolute necessity of the new birth. What raw lifestyle claims wind up doing is bringing a bunch of Christians together who claim the ultimate sanction of Christ's lordship for whatever lifestyle they want everyone else to adopt, whether bread baking, classical and Christian education, beekeeping, alternative medicine, political involvement, and you name itism. Now, lifestyle choices are necessary. I mean, God gave us two legs, and so we have to figure out some way of putting on our pants, right? There has to be some shared assumptions with regard to clothing, with regard to modesty, with regard to what ostentatious display and all of that would be. But we have to be really careful of our hearts here. We have to make our decisions before the Lord, and we have to check the connection of this spoke to the axle of grace like 3 times a day, maybe 7 times a day. If you're an opinionated fellow, then check it 10 times a day. Am I really making these choices because I'm studying the scriptures and following the leading of the Spirit of God? A day schooler and a homeschooler, both well schooled in grace, have a blended and harmonious lifestyle together. They're using different tools to educate their kids, but they have a shared lifestyle. And you can have people who are doing the same thing who don't have a shared lifestyle at all. So you could have two kids in a Christian school sitting, their desks are right next to each other, and they have radically different lifestyles. They're thinking about the school differently. Their approach to the school is different. And then you could have one of those kids be best friends with homeschooled kid across the street, and they're doing different things for the same reason, as opposed to people who are doing the same thing for different reasons. And then people who share the same method, detached from grace, will soon fall to quarreling about the color of the textbooks. But it's not the blue, but the principle of the thing. So the second spoke in our worldview wheel is the way we actually live. That includes the color of our garden hoses, that includes how we mow the lawn, that includes how we set up business, that includes how we pay our bills, that includes, you know, all the practical hands-on lifestyle choices. So what do we think? What do we affirm? Do we believe the Apostles' Creed? That's catechesis. That's spoke number one. Spoke number two would be lifestyle, the way it's actually embodied in the way we live.
I'm a 2009 graduate of New St. Andrews College, and I'm a commercial property manager.
Three kids at Logos, one at home still, and I do flowers on the side out of our house. When you have these little people that you're responsible to shepherd, you realize I need to know what I'm talking about because they need to have a firm foundation and they need deep roots so that they don't get blown over and that they're ready to stand up for the truth.
I am a programmer. The language aspect of NSA is a fantastic preparation for any sort of programming.
I'm a real estate broker here in town. I think absolutely the perfect education for being in sales of really any kind.
I actually put it to a lot of great use when I was working in the political realm.
I am a pastor in Central Coast, California. Whatever vocation you take, it'll make you take that seriously because you're seeing it through the lens of the sovereignty and lordship of Christ.
For more information, visit us online at nsa.edu.